Hi, see Nathan. It is Crosstown Conversations on the cusp of what everybody is promising to be a spectacular carnival season, and I'm looking forward to it. We're going to talk about the roots of carnival and Mardi Gras with Bruce Sunpie Barnes, who is incredibly informed about the history of the culture of this region. And then we're going to talk with Denise Augustine, likewise, very informed, especially on the voodoo component. And she's going to talk about a big event coming up this weekend that you all are going to want to go to. So here we go with Bruce first and then Denise. I am so thrilled to be face-to-face, if not handshakeable, with Sunpie Barnes, and I think it's time for me to find out where the Sunpie came from. I've known you for, I don't know how many years, a couple decades, and I...
A couple years, yeah.
I'm sure I asked you in the past, and I have forgotten, so... but Bruce Sunpie Barnes is a culture bearer. He is a musician. He is a producer. Is an important part for me of Mardi Gras. Bruce, what's going on this year? Last couple of years that we were constrained, I sat on my porch and waved at people and wore all my regalia on my little polar fleece top. I think things are breaking out this year is what I'm hearing. Tell me what you're hearing.
Well, I think things are definitely going to roll out, and the city is extremely excited. I know I am, and, you know, I'm in that Mardi Gras mode right now, deep in, making the stuff that we have, our suits and so forth, and regalia, as you mentioned, for the Northside Skull and Bone Gang, which is one of the old neighborhood associations, the Northside Skull and Bone Gang.
Which one? What was that name?
The North Side, Skull and Bone Gang.
North Side.
Yeah, so we started out as an organization, as it's known throughout oral history, in what was being formed as a new neighborhood, what's in the Sixth Ward, from the Claude Treme area there, as a gang of African-American men that were...
Oh, you must be talking about the area of Treme that is certainly above Claiborne, but also above Broad, or not? Just Claiborne to Broad?
No, the part that's directly across from the French Quarter, from Rampart Street.
Oh, wait, that's north?
It's north of the French Quarter.
Okay, got it. All right.
And there were only maybe one or two actual formed neighborhoods before that, which is like the Marigny and a couple of there weren't many neighborhoods that were like, you know, distinctly, you know, like fully formed. And that was a new developing one that was north of French Quarter. So that's the orientation.
That's so interesting that you call it new, because Treme, of course, is, if I'm not mistaken, in my history, is that it's the oldest Black neighborhood in America.
Right. Well, the gang started in 1819. So,
wow.
So it was started by a man who came into New Orleans from some part of South Africa, is the oral history.
South
he started
Africa.
Masking as a skeleton in that year. And, you know, so the lineage of it is.
In 1819, did you say?
1819.
Wow. Okay. We're talking history. See, this is what I'm talking about with Bruce Barnes. You're going to get the original roots history. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'm passing on.
What do they do? What do they do exactly?
Plastic
beads. That's for sure.
No beads. This is a masking tradition by a man who was a sailor, but you know, it incorporated lots of people that were enslaved actually. But Mardi Gras Day was a day that you could figure out how to be yourself. So, you know, we pay homage to our family ancestry and African ancestry. And we give, drum and sing and give social warnings to citizens door to door about living a good life of sort of nonviolence. And, you know, we denounce violence to children and women and men and, you know, drug play and all of those things and gun play and all those things that will expedite your ultimate demise. And as well as, you know, we have some pageantry and fun, but we bring a serious message around those things as well. And, you know, our motto is you next. So don't think that you're getting out of these things that are like a part of the cycle of life, which also includes death. So we represent basically the literal vision of what Carnival is, the shedding of the flesh.
Shedding of
the flesh.
The flesh. That's not an expression I'm familiar with. Tell me about that.
Well, there you go. Well, we came from the dirt and we go back to the dirt. So it's really around African ancestral, you know, homage to dress as a skeleton and remind people this is and it's where you're headed. But while you're here, it's a privilege to be here in this form, and to be able to speak directly to it. You know, these old African traditions that, you know, happen in villages and people, almost all villages or throughout the Caribbean and throughout the African diaspora, you're going to always find people that have these traditions alive. I don't think you can go to an island in the Caribbean where it's not a part of it, or in Central America or South America or across the globe, really, or Papua New Guinea, or, you know, follow the breadfruit trail if you want to, but you're going to see it everywhere. And so
let me just go back for a second. I just want to keep my history lined up. So all of this social warnings brought to the door to door, this sounds like a more current phase, or did that start way back there?
No, yeah. People
were talking about violence and treating your neighbors right and so on from the beginning of this organization.
I'm boiling it down. Yeah, it's one of the main parts of it. It's just, you know, it's an urban scared street. it's not necessarily urban. It came from villages in Africa, and it's still there, you know. And so the masking tradition that we're talking about, there are many different ways you can mask, but this one is using a kind of African head sense that people brought with them when they were most of the people here were enslaved. Not all, of course. New Orleans had the largest free population of people of color in the country,
especially after the immigration from Haiti after the revolution, that we doubled our population for it, or everybody says when that happened.
Yeah, some people came here and they were free. Some people were enslaved. Some people were, you know, so there, you know, it was a three-tiered society at the very minimum. I'd say it was,
you call it three-tiered, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's those are like parts of things that were here, but this came from Africa as we know it. Not necessarily Haiti, of course. Haitian people were doing the same thing. And so a lot of that history of what's going on is, of course, as I said, you know, you can go throughout the Caribbean realm and you're gonna, you know, find very, very similar things that look so similar you probably couldn't even tell. So in terms of the thought process and what's going on and the kind of histories that people have lived and carried on. So living history and written history are obviously two different things. But, you know, for us, that's what we do. That's what we do for.
So this is a part of a story that has people in New Orleans have lived with all their lives, either quietly and secretly or more outspokenly. And some time ago, when I used to run the streets more, when I was just learning about New Orleans music and producing more than I am now, I can remember running into a guy named Yoakum. Forget his first name. Yoakum was his last name. He had a family house in the French Quarter, kind of a, you know, one of that variety of funky people from
Peter Yoakum,
my husband is yelling at me. Yeah. So Peter says to me, gee, you do understand that all people in New Orleans are Black. And you find that out if you think you're white and you go someplace else and you understand who you are as compared with other white people. Now, I don't
We'll
think he
be
was trying to
shocked.
appropriate. He was not trying to appropriate, which is something
No.
that folks get accused of if they're white and they immerse themselves in black culture. So that's a very complicated strand of all of our racial history. But what he was just saying is that we are so influenced by the
Yes.
black culture in so many different ways, what we eat, what we wear, what we do. And a lot of it has not been clarified until you bump up against it in one way or another. And
Yeah, when you go other places, you're definitely going to be sometimes, if you're New Orleans, you're going to be shocked at,
who you are as compared with who they are.
Yes.
And so, one of my other favorite stories along these lines really goes to, let's see, who was it? Johnny Vodakovich, the drummer. So, when I was doing the Do Drop In at the Contemporary Arts Center in the early days of that in history, I hung out with those guys a lot. And so, Johnny says to me one day, when musicians leave the city and they go to play elsewhere, they sound Mickey Mouse initially because they're playing at the speed they're used to playing at in New Orleans, but it comes across so much faster than intended because we have some kind of physical resistance in the air, it being so close to sea level or below sea level, that there's a resistance that factors into everything we do, all our politics, everything but the playing of music in particular. So that's another one of my lessons that I had to absorb. So for you, Mardi Gras goes back to 1819. Do you remember the name of the gentleman who was one of the founders of that North
I don't
Side?
have the name of the actual person. This is just oral history that chief to chief has been, passing along through oral history. Like, I learned it from Al Morris, Big Al, who was my big chief, and he learned that from Big Arthur Regis, who was his big chief, and down the line. And I spoke to, some of the older folks that had masked skeleton. There was a man named Isidore, a Creole man who masked in the in the 20s, and I think he started masking 1928 and 9. He was out in the Good Samaritan nursing home out in New Orleans East, and when I talked to him several times, I had some nice interviews I'd done, and I had him on my DAT tape machine, but it drowned during Katrina. So those are lessons to learn. The oral history is like how it's been done for, many millennia. And so, keeping that part of it and embodying, what those things are is like what we do. We invite our ancestral spirits to embody us and go out and wake up the city and take to the
Well,
street.
before we go much further, I want to continue. I just want to remind people that your interviews, your accumulation of your knowledge of our culture is available in books online. And so let's take just a second to tell people where they can read your work.
Probably different places, but there's a book called Talk That Music Talk that definitely is encompassing a lot of the kinds of collective oral histories. And you just made a quote from Johnny Vodakovich. He's in that book, so he's in a chapter in that Talk That Music Talk book. It's got 32 musicians that were interviewed, young and old. So these are like viewpoints that are not just one direction. Often it's a one direction. If there's an older person there, there's a mentor of younger people, but we had those young people interview their mentors.
So, your stuff is available in the book and online.
Music, yeah, sure. Online, you can get it online. You can get it. And I produce a lot of music from my group, musical group Sun Pine, Louisiana Sunspots Music for the National Park Service. With the National Park Service, we did a lot of interpretation of American history and different historical places through music, which is one of the best ways that people have told about their lives throughout history, is a way that they could say it open, free, with artistry, as well as craft in terms of understanding. And often that, you know, they would have less chance of receiving some kind of retaliation for telling the truth about who and what they were and what they've gone through. So there's a CD called Freedom Is Coming. It's 39 songs around freedom, resistance, and the Underground Railroad. There's another one called Songs of the Lower Mississippi Delta, which is a 37 song volume around national parks throughout the Lower Mississippi Delta, 10 national parks.
I need to check that out.
There's another one called Songs of the Mississippi, which is songs from Lake Itasca down through Venice, Louisiana, that are representative of the Mississippi River. And that's a...
You know, I did a recording once, just to share with you. My husband was invited to be an artist in a program in France that yearly puts on a river festival, and they had chosen Mississippi one year, and they contacted him, and we decided to do a kind of a little, I don't know what you call it, a anthology of music from the mouth of the river to to the Delta. And of all the things that we did, it was from Native American drum music all the way down to river calls, you know, on the river. There was one that sticks out. Mark Twain.
Right. Waterless Twain. Twain. Yeah, river.
Better that you sing than me. I love to sing, and I have a beautiful voice. There's only one problem. I can't sing on key to save my life. So,
not a detail.
I did this. I did this recording of a Islenos guy who was singing one of the old
Decimes.
The
Decimes.
Yes, and it's an extraordinary little piece of music that sometime, if you want, I should give you the whole anthology that we did, because it was really quite beautiful and one of my favorite things that we ever did. And but his section of it towards the end is something very special. He's probably not alive anymore. So I was catching the end of that.
That's some wonderful tradition. Stuff.
I mean, there's still a lot of Islenos culture, of course, being represented in St. Bernard, thank goodness, but I'm not sure about those songs that he sang.
Yeah, we used to put on with the National Park Service, Islenos Festival out at Chalmette and down in Violet.
Which they still do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Bruce, with Mardi Gras coming up, tell me, what is your way of spending Mardi Gras day?
Mardi Gras morning starts pretty early for me. I'm up usually at least about 4, probably more like 3:30 in the morning, and you know, getting all my stuff together, loading up to go to the space where we're going to come out of. So that's an early morning, and we usually hit the street between 5 and 5:30. We are in the street, singing, dancing, chanting, and you know, bringing back those old carnival spirits with us and doing what we do with the Northside Skull and Bone Gang. And we don't really have a set route or direction. We don't have a set time that we're going to start and stop or anything like that. We let the spirit carry the day. So it varies. It could be, you know, I've done it from 5 a.m. until 5 a.m.
So, of course.
You know, right. You know, the beautiful part is we don't run the show. We let the ancestral spirits run the show. And so that's really how it goes. And but, you know, the first part of it, you know, when we come out, it's usually pretty serious. So, you know, when you evoke your ancestral spirits, they show up and you don't know if they're going to be heavy or light or what's going to happen. But
you can feel it. You can
Oh
really
yeah,
feel.
you can feel it, and everybody else that's close to it will feel it, I believe. And you know, so we don't try and like have it be too much fanfare, but just let it do what it's supposed to do. We don't make it do it; we let it happen. And so you know, and you know, bring you know, there's some entertainment element to it because we're playing music and so forth. But really, it's around the more like the wake up call and the healing, you know, spirit.
Where do you usually start out?
Well, we are coming out of the Little People's Place, right there at
Okay,
11,
right.
what is it, 11, 19 or so, you know, Barrack Street. Yeah, so Little People's Place, that little neighborhood bar there, you know, for many years, for since I've been masking, the first 20 or 21 years, we came out of the Backstreet Cultural Museum over on Henriette Tilleul. Used to be old St. Claude Street, you know, and that's where I really started masking it with Al Morris and, you know, Sylvester Francis over there. But now we come out of Little People's Place, which is a, you know, still beautiful little vulnerable, I would say, neighborhood bar, one of the few that's still left around like that.
So you come out and you're letting the spirits guide you, but you got to stop for sustenance along the way. And I didn't mention food when I talked about all the traditions here that are so important. So I'm just curious, where do you have your midday break to eat, and what do you eat to sustain yourself while you're
We don't really plan a
marching with
midday.
the.
We don't do that.
You don't eat?
We don't we if it happens, it's not something that we plan. We let the spirit carry the day. We don't
So wherever
have
you
like
happen
a
to be.
we don't have a lunch spot where we stop
Right. Well, you know, but
at.
that to me is one of the absolute key
People offer
pleasures of
us,
Mardi Gras, is not
yeah.
knowing where you're going to be, what you're going to do, who you're going to be with, what neighborhood you're going to wind up with,
Right.
which tells you that my favorite Mardi Gras of all was the police strike when we didn't have parades on the big parades on the
Right.
avenues. We all just wandered around, and I met a whole new group of people
Right.
doing that. Ollie Sasson and his film buddies were where I landed up, and I've been friends with Ollie ever since. So, and
Right.
that's what happens. You run into people. I've just gotten lost in a neighborhood and met people that I didn't know, and they've been friends for life. So I think that's another really important part of Mardi Gras.
Yeah, and so I wouldn't say that we don't, you know, again, we don't plan to do anything. Now, people along the route that we are in any particular place that, you know, because we don't know what that's going to be, they don't know, we don't know, but people will sometimes offer food. Now, we had some old Creole ladies some years ago, it was five generations of them. Somehow they would always appear.
They'd find you.
Yeah, and they
They
would find
would get the map
us,
from the spirits.
and they had they would have everything, you know. So you could pause for 10 minutes or something like that, or 15 minutes at these people's house, and I would I'll try one moment. I'm gonna maybe remember the name, but they would have grilled oysters and just everything. You could drink gumbo, the sweetest meatballs, you know, some meatballs that everybody like in New Orleans. And all that stuff like that. So they would somehow always
Sustain
show
you.
up. Yes, yeah, and they would show up. So, you know, it's, but yeah, that's, you know, that's the Mardi Gras. That's the kind of Mardi Gras we have. So just what you said, it's completely random in nature in terms of like direction and where you're going to be and who you're going to end up seeing or where you're going to be at. Usually I don't recognize anybody because I can't really see them. I'm masking. I'm in a but I can hear them and I can feel them, you know. That's definitely the first 5 or 6 hours is completely like that. I can't see what's in front of
So
me or behind me or anything like that, so you know.
I can't resist asking you. I'm just going to assume that, as the day winds down, you're just kind of, slogging through and just continuing the keeping the beat going, let's say. Next day, Ash Wednesday, when people go to the cemeteries to literally visit their ancestors. What do you do on Ash Wednesday? Are you alive? Are you in bed for until 3 in the afternoon, or how does that go?
Usually, it's a tremendous amount of energy inside you. So for us, we go to the cemetery before. We entertain spirits, and that's what comes with us. Yeah, we
You
answer
call
prayers.
to the spirits in
We
advance.
sing, chant the whole nine yards, and in fact,
Oh
they
my
come and
goodness.
embody us. It's not what you think, maybe, but it's yeah,
Is
that's how we
anybody,
do it.
do anybody, do folks follow you, or is that strictly a private thing?
No, folks don't follow me because then they would have to carry that same weight. It's not a, how can you say
Right.
it? Yeah, nothing to play with. It's not for people who aren't like completely prepared for that, because
So that takes me to the part of the conversation I did want to have, and I'm gonna run out of time because I'm already kind of over it. But so voodoo traditions, or vodou or vodan, I don't know what is politically correct expression, so you'll share that with me.
Anything you
But
want. Well, no, I ain't no politician. So politically
so
correct.
what do you use? What do you, what expression
Was
do
just
you?
saying, well, I'll just say voodoo. I wouldn't fake like I
Okay.
don't
All right.
know
Okay.
what, how it's spelled and how people say it is okay with me. I would call it African spirituality, basically, because
Right. Okay.
it's a conglomerate amalgamation.
So how much a part of Mardi Gras and of culture in general in New Orleans do you attribute to that African spiritual roots, and how would you for the lay person basically present that?
I would say it's the overall guiding force, but it's combined with many different things, right? But it's absolutely the general guiding force. It's what you were saying about going to other places and realizing that you're not like the rest of the average people in across
Iowa.
the Americas. It's
Yeah.
different than we live different than that. That's what I could say. And so we're absolutely on an island in New Orleans in general.
As many
Even,
people say, the no northernmost part of the Caribbean.
yeah, that and the Isle of Denial or whatever. But this town is homocentric. So
I like that.
definitely we look within ourselves and not out into the rest of the world or on even though you see people with a lot of phones and things like that and filming on Mardi Gras Day, that's the overall arc and spirit of it is what you said. It's in general, it's got its own beat and so forth. It's something that was brought here by African people. It's obvious, and it's combined with the European movements and thought process of carnival. But there was negotiation that took place to make it happen and have it continue. And so that's how it rose in New Orleans, period. So there's no, shouldn't be a mystery to people, but sometimes, like folks come from many different reasons if they come from outside of here, but they come for the mystique of New Orleans. So that mystique is shrouded in what is mystery for some people and what's common neighborhood knowledge, like good morning or good night when people walk by
Absolutely
you.
have to say, or just how you doing? You gotta say how you doing on the street.
Yeah, that's
So,
it.
Bruce, I've gotta I can't resist telling you one more experience of mine that really personified the difference. So I was working for David Dinkins' administration in New York in the 90s, and I was fortunate, and I don't oh, it was Johnny Jackson. Johnny Jackson invited me to ride in Zulu. And so know what that means? That means that this white girl was in blackface with a skirt on and a wig and all the coconuts and implements. So I was extremely proud of being invited to do that. As you know, to be invited to ride in Zulu is an
Yeah,
incredible honor.
little
It's
Zulu. Yeah, it
top of
is.
the pop, top of the whole Mardi Gras food chain. So I'm showing my pictures in New York, and somebody who didn't like me, and I have a few of those because I'm kind of an outspoken dame from the
Welcome to the
South.
club.
I'm from this, but I'm from the South, Bronx. So we are known for being a little outspoken. If you think of some of the other J Lo's and Cardi B's and so on from my part of the world, you understand that. But it's not always accepted. I don't come off as the Southern princess. So I was showing off my pictures, and the pictures land in the lap of the communications department, the PR department for the mayor's office, and they're saying, "Jean, you were in blackface."
Yeah,
Basically, my job was on the line. Okay, they were saying, "Oh, what is this all about?" So I had to have Johnny Jackson send coconuts, spears, grass skirts, the whole thing, and send a letter explaining again what an honor it was for me to ride
It's a no, I wasn't in blackface.
to literally save
I was
my
in Zulu.
job. Yeah. So I mean, I'm still proud of it, and I got my picture, and I don't show it off every day of the week, but I certainly treasure it. And
Absolutely.
but again, that was another reminder. And I'm so naive and stupid to think that, that was a time when the sensitivity wasn't as dominant as it is now. Okay, so I was just totally naive. I was just so proud and excited to be a part of that. Anyway,
Absolutely.
I look forward to, of course, many more conversations with you. And
Absolutely.
I do need to offload some history that I think would be interesting for you because,
Let's do
I
it.
take a little bit of credit for something very important. And that is that when we did the Do Drop In rerun at the Contemporary Arts Center in the 70s, which was a result of doing a Alan Toussaint's first benefit concert that he ever did at the Contemporary Arts Center. And it was from him that I learned about the Do Drop. And I said, "Oh, well, that's a custom we should still be doing." So we did Do Drop festivals. The
Yeah,
first one I did,
remember.
Charles Neville came back to town from, I think he was in New York at the time. And it was his return to the city and getting with his brothers that was part of, I can't take credit for the whole thing, but was part of the process of the development of the Neville Brothers. And of
Yeah,
course,
know that
oddly,
story.
it's been his decease, his passing, and Arthur's passing that took us away from that incredibly important phase of funk music in the city. But I'm always thrilled to be able to share that I had again a little teeny role in
Charles was a
contributing
good
to
one.
that. So, yeah.
Wonderful. All right,
All
Jean.
right. Well, I'm excited to. I may just try to catch up with you on Mardi Gras morning. Probably not because I'm not walking too well at the moment. I gotta
You
get
never
something
know.
back
We might
taken
catch
care
up with you.
of. There you go. I'll be sitting at 2326 Esplanade on the porch.
All
And
right.
I'm not going to be throwing plastic, but I'm going to be definitely
Gotcha.
communicating with visitors as they come down Esplanade Avenue. So I would love it if you and your group would pass by 23. Oh, I shouldn't say it on the air, but
Too late.
unless
But I
maybe
know
because
where you live already, so
I live right
that's
next.
no problem.
I do live. I have to admit, I just plain live next door to the Free People of Color Museum, so you could easily find that landmark.
And the home of the great of the yellow crowned night herons.
The what?
The yellow crowned night herons.
Yes, exactly. That's a more reason. That's a post Katrina development, and
Yes,
oh
it
yeah,
is.
we could talk about that for a while because there's lots of nuances to that. I have saved many, and that fall down to the street and are going to get killed by cars speeding, unfortunately, on Esplanade. There's a lot of people who think that Esplanade's a speed track because it doesn't have as much traffic as some other places. That's a whole other issue. I love talking with you, and I've talked too much, and I apologize, but you've elicited these memories, so as you
Same
do,
here.
that's what you do. Okay. Look
And there's
forward
mutual. All
to Mardi
right.
Gras with Bruce Sun Pie. Oh, I forgot. Okay, where did Sun Pie come from?
Oh, well, I had an uncle from Bastrop, Louisiana, named Sun Pie as well. He was half Blackfoot Indian, and that name got passed on to me by my aunt, his wife, my Aunt Fanny, who called me Little Sun Pie because I would follow him around like a kind of like a little duck. You know, he was my favorite uncle, so always
Okay.
kept it alive. You know, family stuff,
Love
family
it.
stuff.
Love it.
Yeah.
And family stuff is, again, that's what we're all about here too.
Yeah.
And I thank you for everything you do and for taking the time to talk with me in the middle of all of it. So have a
Right.
great carnival.
Thank you, Jean. Yeah, tell
All
Baba
right.
said hello. All right.
Talk to you soon. I sure will. Okay. Bye. Have Denise Augustine here with me. Denise is going to give you an announcement of something happening this weekend. It's a big deal because it is an attempt for us all to better understand what voodoo is really all about, not just about candles and dancing around the fire. Denise,
Exactly.
what you got this weekend?
Okay, so this weekend is the inaugural New Orleans Voodoo Day celebration, and it is modeled after the National Voodoo Day in Benin, which happens every year on January 10th. That one has been so successful, it's no longer one day. They're now talking about a 2-day festival or maybe even a 3-day festival.
Wow.
But this is not a festival. This is a celebration modeled after that one in Benin. And one of the reasons is because by 1840, New Orleans had the largest slave port in America. And initially, when those very first enslaved people arrived from Africa, not the first enslaved to arrive in Louisiana, the ones that arrived from Africa happened in 1719, and they came from the Semigambian region, from Ouidah, which is called Dahomey, which, the area of Benin. And that's mostly where the French brought the enslaved from. And so with them came voodoo. And voodoo is the word voodoo actually means spirit. It is the oldest religion in the world, estimated to be somewhere between 8 and 10,000 years old.
Wow.
Now, this Voodoo Day celebration has three major intentions. We want to acknowledge the history of the transatlantic slave trade and its horror, and to ask for absolution. We want to honor the spirits of those ancestors who were lost in the Middle Passage and those who suffered and sacrificed in slavery, and to celebrate the achievements of those ancestors who came out of this oppression to contribute to not only to New Orleans, but to the world. For instance, Louisiana was one of the only places that allowed a drum. Because we were Catholic, we actually got to meet initially all around the city, and we made our own drums. And so from this, we gave them this rhythm that actually has the foundation in many of our musical genres. But
Are you
out
talking
of
about
that came
Zambula?
jazz. Huh?
Bambula?
Bambula, yeah, the bambula, that
Okay.
bambula rhythm.
Yeah.
So gave us the foundation from jazz. And if you'll notice, all New Orleans music is dance music, right? You cannot play New Orleans music and not dance. I have a friend of mine who had a car accident very recently, and I said, are you coming out? She says, no, because if there's going to be drumming, I'm going to dance, and I don't want to hurt my back even more. So it's also an act of spiritual reparations I'm going to pour libations at 10 o'clock on the moonwalk. It will be the first pouring of libations. The river is very important to us, of course. And then we're going to start a procession to some of the most significant places that we had trauma, these trauma locations. For instance, we're going where Solomon Northrup was sold, the guy from 12 Years a Slave, right? So that's going to be our first stop after the river. And this is to bring healing. You know, you pray and you pour libations and you give recognition, you know, to these spirits for healing, because energy never dies and spirits are energy. And so this is to heal the traumas and the wounds of slavery, but also of current day racism.
Is there just some people who you say voodoo and they go, ooh, voodoo, they're afraid of it. And and we want those same people to hear this other story about the healing, about the ability, the attempt to try to help people move from trauma to peace, self-peace, right? So let me just say, let's go into the present in our next conversation, but let's close with you telling people exactly where to come, when, and here's most important for me, where to park. I don't go anywhere unless I know where to park.
We're waiting for the answer from the mayor's office. We think we're going to be allowed to park in the back of the municipal auditorium. We're hoping to have that answer tomorrow. If not, you know, you do what New Orleans people do. You park and you walk. But I'm going to park at Congo Square, because that's where we're going to end up. And I'm going to walk to the moonwalk. And this is Sunday, January 14th at 10 o'clock. Please wear white. These are sacred ceremonies. Please wear white and bring something for the altars. We're going to have two altars set up. So some flowers, a plant, some herbs, something that these herbalists, voodoo practitioners, many times, you know, use herbs for not only spiritual reasons, but for healing. These are animistic people who know that there's spirit in every living thing. And so we set our altars with flowers and plants, roots and herbs. And some altars even have, you know, small bottles of alcohol on them, but bring something for the altar in the procession. Because there, as we get to Congo Square, and we should get there around 12 o'clock, there's going to be the drawing of a veve, calling of the spirits, opening the way with Legba, and we will have an authentic voodoo ceremony. And let me say something about voodoo. In this colony, which was founded by the French actually had a set of rules called Code Noir. And one of the things about Code Noir says, if you are in this colony, you have to be a Catholic. And if you look at voodoo and Catholicism, in many ways, they're built the same way. Catholicism says there's one God. And voodoo says there is one God. And Catholicism says, God doesn't have time to talk to you. Something going on. Here's a saint for this, a saint for that, a saint for the other. Go to the saint. The saint will act as an intercessor for you. They'll go to God for you. Voodoo says, God doesn't have time to talk to you. We have Loa for everything. Go to the Loa, do your intercessory prayers and ceremonies and rituals, and the Loa will go to God for you. And so when they converted these people, they were like, oh, this is an easy conversion. We will just hide, we'll just hide our Loa behind these Catholic saints. And so the Loa that opens the way in every voodoo ceremony is named Legba, called Legba and other things in other places. So we put him behind St. Peter. St. Peter has keys, right? He must can open the way. And so these very creative and innovative people managed to hide their voodoo behind Catholic saints and continued to practice this healing religion that was a source of solace for them and for survival. Voodoo gives hope. You know, I've done all of this. I pray to God. There's nothing else I can do. Let's leave it to the spirits. And so one of the parts of this ceremonial day is to educate, to bring understanding and to educate. Because believe it or not, Hollywood did a number on people. So did the church. It is evil. It is demonization. It has evil. It's not
a common, you know, it's an historic pattern in the history of humankind that we latch one religion, one belief, one custom onto those of another that's more accepted. I could go on. I'm going to do it right now, but. And so it's not surprising at all to hear what you're saying. And so once again, most important thing, Sunday, the 14th.
10 a.m. On the moonwalk. Please wear white and bring something for the altar.
Then you'll be coming down to Congo Square.
The procession is going to go down on North Peters to Esplanade. And then we'll make several stops, pray, pour libations at trauma centers, on to Congo Square, of course, the one place we have much documented proof of our ancestors performing, having voodoo ceremonies. Bending was big. You know, I always tell people Black women in New Orleans have a job, a half, and a hustle. We all, you know, what else do you do? Well, I braid hair on the side, and you can talk to many of us, and there's always two and three jobs in our lives. And none of this is by accident, because at one point you could buy your freedom. And if you give me a number, then I have something to work for. So I think that is why it's in our DNA. And those of us from Mali, we were known as the merchant princesses of Africa. So we're always trying to sell you something. Not only,
Hey, listen, again, that is another characteristic of humankind. And really, in many ways that we probably don't understand as well as we might, all living creatures have ways of helping each other or challenging each other. And lately, I've been on to the whole issue of how the trees, I've learned, talk to each other through roots. And underground with fungi as the connecting link. Now, if trees are talking to each other and other plants are talking to each other, I know in my garden, certain plants are not happy next to each other. So I know that there's some truth to this. Anyway, I look forward to the continuation of our conversation. I'm looking forward to the event itself.
Thank you so much,
Denise Augustine.
My pleasure, Ms. Jean.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I accept
honey.
My Jean, even though I'm from the South Bronx, not the South.
Oh, that's a French name.
So I when the doctor calls
call
Jean,
yourself?
I get up and come. What?
What do you call yourself? How do you pronounce your name?
I call myself a reformed Yankee.
How do you pronounce your name?
I'm both ways, Jean and Jean.
Okay.
But, you know, it was, quite frankly, in junior high school, it was a little pretension on my part because I loved the language of French. I spoke it very well back then. I can't do it much anymore. So I adopted the J-E-A-N-N-E. I was really born Jean, Paula, Nathan. And then my baptized name was, not my baptized name, my confirmed name was... is Renee. So I'm Jean Paula Renee Nathan, which my husband and some of my closest friends all call me Jean Paula Renee. So anyway, I answered to it all. Talk to you very soon, and the
Okay.
best of luck on Sunday. And y'all
Thank
get
you.
out there. This is going to be a very special. You're going to learn something a lot more about voodoo than you thought you knew. Believe me.
Yes. Thank you, Miss
Bye,
John.
Denise.
Okay,
Bye.
bye-bye.
Time for Carnival and all of its many levels, routes, and innovations. I think you'll see all of them as you get out in the streets again for this event. I'll be sitting on my porch probably on Esplanade. Thank you, Jean Nathan. Cross-town conversations. See you out in the streets.